Cultivo Raíces presenta su programa
Espejos de Aztlán.
Información,
arte,
cultura.
Bienvenidos.
Bienvenidos, este es su programación de Espejos de Aztlán. Soy Sara Gallegos, aquí con ustedes esta noche. Tonight we have with us organizers from the Southwest Organizing Project, SWAP, on to discuss their initiative Project Feed the Hood. So we have with us food justice intern Stephanie Olivas, member and organizer Casey Cody, and the project coordinator Rodrigo Rodriguez. Thank you, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Why don't we start with just a brief background on the Southwest Organizing Project itself. Tell me, what is SWAP and how did it get started?
Yeah, so SWAP was founded in 1980 here in Albuquerque by a group of local community organizers. So it's been around for 33 years, and it's worked on various social justice issues throughout the Southwest and here in Albuquerque and in New Mexico. It came out of the work of folks in the 60s and 70s, and it ultimately came out of the Chicano Communication Center that existed here in Albuquerque during the 70s and 80s. The mission and vision of the organization are to empower disenfranchised communities in the Southwest to realize racial and gender equality and social and economic justice. And so that encompasses a whole bunch of different issue-based campaigns that the organization has worked on throughout its history.
Okay, and so tonight we're going to be focusing mostly on the campaign of Project Feed the Hood. Tell me a little bit about that and how it got started.
Yeah, Feed the Hood kind of came out of, Feed the Hood's fourth year in full existence. But it came out of kind of much larger conversations around sustainability, around water conservation, around culture, around heritage, and kind of some of the work that SWAP had already been doing to work with farmers in the Middle Rio Grande to maintain water rights, to maintain land use, and to really kind of get people having those conversations again. And so Project Feed the Hood came about 4 years ago with our first community garden over in the International District, kind of by the airport. My mentor, Joaquin Lujan, who's been at SWAP for several years and has been working in the social justice movement pretty much his whole life since the 60s. So he kind of pulled us in and told us about this idea for this community garden. And we had a really, really close relationship with the City Councilman Ray Garduño from District 6. Who helped us kind of identify a piece of property in his district. We partnered with the aviation department and started this small community garden that we called the International District Community Garden. And so that's kind of where Project Feed the Hood got started. It was really kind of a brainchild of myself and Joaquin and my friend Travis McKenzie. We were already doing some stuff with after-school programs, you know, having conversations about food, trying to eat better ourselves, and trying to have those conversations with the kids at the schools. Feed the Hood was really an opportunity for us to take that to the next level and start engaging with communities in a really direct way to kind of challenge some of the food systems that exist. And obviously we knew that we weren't going to be able to feed, you know, the whole community off of this one little community garden in the Southeast Heights. But the idea was to have a space that could function as public space, function kind of as a park or a library would, that folks can come in, start having those conversations, start talking about food, where our food comes from, what that means to us. We're in a really unique spot here in New Mexico because we have such a long agrarian heritage, and people still have those connections. Mm-hmm. You know, even in urban environments here in New Mexico, folks are still one or two generations removed from the land. You know, folks remember working in gardens, or their grandparents still have gardens. The chile farmers are still around. So people still have that connection. Even some of our more corporate, big scale farmers are still pretty, you know, down home, still owned by local businesses. So it's been a unique spot for us to start having those conversations. You know, it's an organizing tool for us.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned kind of some of the reasoning behind starting the project. So I want to talk a little bit about that for our listeners to give some background on the politics behind it. So maybe can you talk a little bit about some of the exploitive food systems that do exist globally? And I know one of the missions of the project is food literacy. So can you talk a little bit about both of those aspects of it?
Well, when we look at our current food systems, we look at the most popular things that we see in our grocery stores. It's very monocropped, very few types of lettuce, very few types of tomatoes, fruits, all different types of produce. You don't have a very wide variety of options. And that's sort of how food production is in the world right now. It's all very large scale, all monocropped, and it's all produced in different parts of the world other than where we live. And a lot of times that's the only option for people, and sometimes people don't have that option, period. They don't have access to fresh produce, much less, you know, or natural, organic, local produce.
And is that kind of the concept behind what a food desert is? Can you talk about what a food desert means?
Yeah. So there isn't a place for people in a certain community in a certain area within, is it a few miles?
In urban settings, it's generally like a mile or more that people have to travel. In mm-hmm. rural settings, it's a little bit further, the designation. But the bottom line is that folks have to travel beyond their convenience in order to access food. And in a place like New Mexico, mm-hmm. where, you know, public transit is virtually non-existent or, you know, very sparse, it's hard for folks to access, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables. And you look at some communities where there might be a grocery store, but as Stephanie was saying, the idea of monocropping, where they're only growing one certain kind of potato, because that's what folks are used to, that's what folks are buying, that's what's being used. But like if you look at just science, right, that's what led to the potato mm-hmm. famine in Ireland, things like that. The idea that, you know, there's 6,000 varieties of potatoes or whatever in different parts of the world, and we're eating one kind here in the United States, starchy white potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
The idea, that's where our kind of desire to engage around food literacy came from, is, you know, seeing, as we started to engage with schools and with family members, it takes us into those conversations of, like, what are people eating,
mm-hmm.
really? Why are, you know, cheeseburgers a dollar and bananas are not, you know? We were at the store. We had some folks in from Al Jazeera Media came in to do a little piece on one of our organizers and kind of followed him around to one of the farmers markets. And then we took them to the little corner store by the community garden. They bought a Snapple, a Powerade, and 3 bananas, and it came out mm-hmm. to $11. You know, that's the culture that we're living in right now, especially in New Mexico. You know, there's reports that have come out really recently, you know, pointing to New Mexico as being not only the worst place in the country to raise a child, mm-hmm. but the place with the largest food deserts in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that has a lot to do with access for tribal communities and rural communities in New Mexico. But even here in Albuquerque, you go to parts of the west side, parts of the southeast heights, parts that are traditionally low-income neighborhoods, and there's, you know, not a grocery store in the area, and especially when you're talking about places where there's a lot of dense living like that in urban settings,
mm-hmm.
you know, people are heavily reliant on public transportation. So mm-hmm. if they're not able to walk to the store, you know, riding their bike, getting on the bus, whatever, bumming a ride from their neighbors to go get groceries for the month or for the week or for, you know, to feed the family, becomes a real inconvenience. And so it does become easier at that point to go down to the McDonald's where you can feed a family of 5 for $20, you know, and everyone's full and everyone's satisfied. The idea that people kind of get stuck in this mode of talking about hunger and people, you know, not eating, I don't know if that's necessarily the problem in the United States. Is people might not be missing meals, but if their meals are nutritionally void,
mm-hmm.
They might be better off not eating a meal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the idea, and there was that documentary, Fat, Sick, and Broke or whatever, that people in the United States are not only overweight, but they're nutritionally
malnutritioned.
Right.
And this generally happens mostly to low-income communities.
It's really prevalent.
People of color.
It's really prevalent in communities of color, low-income communities. It's really surprising as well when you look at tribal communities and the rates of dietary diseases, diabetes, heart disease, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, that kind of stuff really, really, really affects low-income communities of
color.
Right.
I was going to ask you, what are some of the consequences of living in these food deserts? And it sounds like there are pretty severe health consequences.
Right.
And it's the health, you know, everybody in general will suffer from malnutrition. But when you look at the kids, them being malnourished affects, you know, their performance in school and prevents them from reaching the potential that they really can.
Okay, well, I want to talk a little bit more then about what you guys are doing to counter some of what's going on. So tell me about, you said your project started with the garden in the International District. So how many gardens do you have now?
So we still have the garden in the International District, which is constantly expanding. We just started doing yoga classes over there with grassroots yoga. We're also doing bi-weekly workshop series, teaching people how to garden, how to do some of the stuff that we're doing at the community garden, how they can do it at their house. We have a seed saving project where we distribute folks through a living seed library. We distribute seeds to folks that want to grow in their backyards and then teach them how to save seeds. We have probably, I think it's 6 after school or school garden programs that we're working to support in different parts of the city. We have a small garden with one of the housing communities out on the west side in the Westgate neighborhood that we partnered with the Westgate Neighborhood Association on. We also have the Feed the Hood Farms, which we just started this year, and our Riverside Farm is down off of Riverside Boulevard in the South Valley, just on the other side of the river. Those are kind of where we're at right now. We have a little bit of stuff going on in different parts of the city, and, you know, we have a lot of moving pieces to Feed the Hood. It kind of started off as this one little project, and then slowly each year has snowballed and more people are interested in getting involved in this food justice movement and really engaging in their communities.
So can you maybe paint a picture for our listeners about what happens at the gardens, who participates, and then what you do with the produce?
So at the gardens right now, we have the workshops, we have yoga, and then we're doing, you know, work there on a regular basis. So volunteers come in, it's open all the time to them, and they can work whenever it's convenient for them. And the food is, we have to give it all away. We're not allowed to sell any of it, not that we would want to. So we give it to the volunteers as more and more starts coming. You know, we have people in the neighborhood who have already been working with us, help us identify other families to give it to.
Okay.
And so at Feed the Hood Farms, which is our earned income component, which we started this year, we do a La Cosecha program with Agricultura in the South Valley. And I think it's over 90 families. And I just learned this morning at the meeting that over half of the shares, both full shares and half shares, go to people that were subsidized through a grant. I believe it might have been through Kellogg.
The Kellogg Foundation.
So that's really exciting. We just had 50 youth from LA come through and spend the morning working with us and then talking about food justice and their own experiences with food and, you know, whether or not they look at the ingredients on their bag of chips and if they don't recognize, you know, a couple of names or words of things on there, then maybe they're not so good. But it was surprising to see that a lot of the youth did know a lot about that and they seemed very interested. And just being able to give some of the extra produce to the neighbors or exchange eggs and cartons to the people on our street is also, you know, really satisfying.
So you've also not only started the community garden aspect, but also chickens and eggs as well?
Yeah, we just got 19 chickens earlier this year. And so,
and that's at the farm in the South Valley.
Okay. And I know you guys, you know, I know the goal is to be economically sustainable and you do participate as well in farmers markets. Can you tell me a little bit about that too?
The farmers markets, one of the main reasons for us to be there, one of the benefits is that, our interaction with folks who come up. We got a lot of people who will, you know, most of the farmers have similar produce, but we have a lot of people who like to come and engage and find out about the other stuff that we're doing besides just growing, you know, tomatoes like everybody else. So we have loyal customers who come through and talk to us, see how we're doing, and, you know, come to us first because they like to support the other work that we do.
So you do sell your produce at the farmers markets?
We have one in Nob Hill, Presbyterian Market, on Tuesday mornings. Come on out tomorrow, 7 o'clock to 1 o'clock. Our Mijo Village Market in the South Valley. And then there will be one here at UNM when school starts back up later in August.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier, Rodrigo, that, you know, that most people here are just a few generations from the land. And I know one aspect of Project Feed the Hood is incorporating traditional growing methods. Can you tell me a little bit about what those methods are and why that's important to incorporate them?
Yeah, that's, I mean, part of the history of the organization is connected to the Chicano movement of the 1960s. And like I said, it kind of evolved out of some of the work of the Chicano Communication Center later on. And so our mentor, Joaquin, who's, you know, none of this would have been possible without Joaquin, and we all just, you know, we appreciate him so much because of the way that he's able to connect us to the history and constantly kind of bring those ties back for us. So for us, it was really important to kind of maintain that heritage of growing here in the Southwest, right? So the chile is really important to us. Every year the organization hosts a chili harvest fiesta in the fall. And so this year we're going to try to expand that and make it a block party and turn it into a really big community event. We always have a green chili stew cook-off that gets pretty competitive, gets pretty heated, if you will. So Joaquin makes sure that we kind of maintain some of that, and we really try to bring it back always to the heritage crops. I think because one of the big kind of barriers in when you talk about food access isn't just like the physical barrier of I can't get to the grocery store. But if you don't know what a rutabaga is and you're at the community garden growing them or you're seeing, you know, kale at the farmer's market for the first time, it's a little intimidating. You know, we had one kid at one of the schools who wouldn't eat a carrot in front of people. He had never eaten a carrot before, and it was embarrassing for him that everybody was like, man, you've never eaten a carrot. And so he took a step out into the hallway, he ate his carrot, and then he came back. And he was like, man, those are good. Can I have some more? So I think that's part of what we work with in the community, too, is to try to overcome some of those barriers. But one of the ways that we figured was let's grow things that people recognize. Mm-hmm. You know, let's grow as much chile and as much tomatoes and jalapenos as we can so that people can take that home and make salsa, so that they can stew with them, so that they can cook with their food that they recognize that's mm-hmm. also healthy. One of the things that we always like to relate back to our organizing is the method of the three sisters. You know, corn, beans, and squash, traditionally, the Tres Hermanas work together in a symbiotic relationship. You know, corn, although it's a staple crop, really saps nitrogen from the soil. But beans are really rich in nitrogen, and their roots help to protect the corn, right? The squash grows out and creates ground cover. The corn also offers a stock for the beans to climb up. And it's proven that when they're eaten together, corn, beans, and squash create a complete protein. Hmm. Separately, you know, they have nutritional value, but eaten together, they create a complete protein. Hmm. And so we always try to relate that back when we're at the schools or out in the community and talk about that symbiosis and that symbiotic relationship and how that translates to community, how that translates to everybody playing their part to build a just society, a place where everybody can prosper and everybody can thrive.
If you're just now joining us, we are discussing Project Feed the Hood with organizers from the Southwest Organizing Project. Now, you just were kind of touching on this, Rodrigo, but how, you know, food deserts is one thing, having access to grocery stores, having access to healthy food. How does actually teaching the community how to grow food itself add another element to that? Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of touched on this. It adds that familiarity.
Right. And I hate to like be cliche about it, but I think that growing your own food is like the last truly revolutionary act. Like creating independence, you know, I think that's powerful not only for our bodies as nutrition, but powerful for our minds and our spirits of like self-determination, you know, and realizing that in order to combat a system that is not working for our community, specifically for our communities, for low-income communities and communities of color, building an alternative to that system. And like I said, even so we participate in something called the South by Southwest experiment, which is a racial justice healing experiment that encompasses our organization and organizations in Texas and Mississippi. And as we've been kind of building these alliances, one of the things we've been talking about is some of the food justice work that each organization is doing. The same is true in Mississippi. You know, people have a connection to the land that's not that far removed. There is, you know, there's larger corporate forces at work that have really kind of focused to remove people from land. Mm-hmm. And so I think that teaching people how to grow and teaching them how to be creative about growing, growing in vertical spaces, growing in buckets, those topsy-turvy tomato planters that were on TV for a while there, that kind of stuff where people can do it in limited spaces in ways that, you know, you're not going to feed your whole family off your topsy-turvy tomato grower, but you know, one tomato plant, if it's done right, can produce a lot of tomatoes in terms of poundage and nutritional value. You know, and those can be frozen and they can be put in pasta sauces later, that kind of thing. So for us, that's what it comes down to, is we know that we're not going to be feeding the entire community. We're not going to stamp out hunger with our little South Valley small farm. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is start those conversations. And those conversations ultimately lead us into a place where we can start enacting some systemic change, you know, getting people on our side, working with community members and showing them. And it starts as simple as like, this is how you grow a tomato. And eventually that conversation, as you start to build that rapport with the community, that conversation becomes a conversation about water rights in the Middle Rio Grande or about the contamination at Kirtland Air Force Base. Those conversations start to come out naturally. And that idea of like leadership and emergent leadership and people's ideas and their passions will bubble to the top. So that's really what it comes down to for us.
And that's what we want to use the farm and the community garden for. Yes, we're there growing food. And we're doing these workshops and teaching people how to do these things is very important, but it is very much so about creating these conversations and raising that awareness and then talking about the things that are going on that we are doing to create these overall changes.
Can you guys share with me some of your personal observations about the changes and the progress that you've witnessed in these communities?
I just like to say I've been thinking about this saying that was shared to us by one of our mentors, Miguel Santisteban. He's got a farm up in Taos and does a lot of really great work. But he says that when we work in the fields, that it reminds us of what it means to be a human being. And I think that's the basis where we can grow out in any direction to address any mm-hmm. of the issues and challenges facing all of our communities.
Mm-hmm. I think we saw the most drastic change in the International District Community Garden. And at the same time, that's been the hardest space for us to maintain and hold down. Mm-hmm. It sits in a community right next to a golf course, kind of by the airport. That's kind of a forgotten about little corner of the city. It's low income housing. It's a really transient kind of area. Folks are in and out. And for us, you know, we started off, it was just a dirt lot. Our agreement with the aviation department, we sit in an empty field. It's a series of empty fields that are, in case they ever need to emergency land a plane, they're going to do it right there. So our agreement with the city was no permanent structures and you can't sell the produce. And that was it. They gave us the keys. They didn't even give us the keys. They just told us, yeah, you guys are cool. We'll be back in a month to put your water line in or whatever. But as we started building in it, we went from a dirt lot where we removed about 40 wheelbarrows worth of mostly glass, broken glass, but there was, you know, syringes and wine bottles and dirty diapers, a couple of couches, a mattress, tires. You know, it was just kind of turned into a dumping lot for folks in the neighborhood or whoever. And as we started cleaning up the space, and then we put up a nice fence, and then after a while, we put up some raised beds, and then that turned into a shade structure. And we kind of started slowly building out this garden or the skeleton of a garden through that first year. People from the neighborhood would come over and just thank us for being there. You know, we're not doing anything yet. There hasn't been as much traffic. People aren't hanging out in this empty lot. You know, you guys picked up the trash. You could see that this was a party lot, that kind of thing. And then later on, as we had our second annual opening and the third annual opening, we had police officers stop by and tell us that they had, you know, had heard from the neighborhood that the neighborhood felt safer, that there wasn't as much crime or whatever. And so I think that kind of stuff ebbs and flows. You know, we're working mm-hmm. now with some folks that have started a neighborhood association in the area because crime has started to spike again.
Neighborhood, they're looking to start a neighborhood association eventually, but neighborhood watch right now, yeah.
Neighborhood watch.
Yeah.
So I think that's for us, that kind of transformative idea. Mm-hmm. Where and that we were really intentional when we picked the name Project Feed the Hood.
Mm-hmm.
It elicits a response from people, mm-hmm. but it also kind of speaks to who we are as community members, you know, as young people, as, you know, young community members here in Albuquerque. It really, the idea was never to feed the community. The idea was to feed the hood and do that in whatever way we could. It doesn't necessarily have to be through food.
Now, I know that you guys are always looking for volunteers. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of your current projects, specifically the ones that you are looking for volunteers for, and maybe provide our listeners with some information on where they can go if they're interested.
At the community garden specifically, we, of course, need help on a regular basis with weeding, sometimes watering. And they can contact me if they want to sign up for a day to come, or they can just come on their own time, really, to weed. The gates are always open. As far as the workshops, we're inviting people to come and co-host workshops, whether it's one that's already existing, and if you think you know enough about it, you know, we're here to provide support and supplies and the space. Or if people have an idea and it that they want to, you know, do themselves, and it doesn't necessarily have to be related to gardening. It could be in art, music, cooking, any sort of thing. And we, of course, we have the yoga going on. And Quayla Robinson from Grassroots Yoga actually reached out to us to do that. So if anybody has any ideas like that, you know, we're completely open to it.
And when are these yoga sessions held?
They're going to be every Thursday evening at 6:15 through August. Those are the dates we have scheduled so far. But, yeah, any ideas that people have for what they think the space could use or what it should look like? Like, this garden is meant to be the communities. We want to know what they want to put in this garden because they're going to be the ones using it most often.
Right. And what's your contact information,
Stephanie? My email is solivas11@cnm.edu, and that's S as in Stephanie, Olivas, O-L-I-V as in Victor, A-S, and my number is 918-0376. And so you can call me about any volunteering opportunities at the community garden. And we also have stuff going on at the farm.
Yeah, we definitely have no shortage of weeds. And if you just want to come check it out and see what we're doing, you can get a hold of us at feedthehoodfarms@swap.net.
And there's also our Facebook that we post up our events on, and the website, swap.net and projectfeedthehood.org.
Okay, and what's the Facebook page?
Facebook.com/projectfeedthehood.
Okay, yes. Great. Well, thank you guys so much for being with us this evening and sharing all of the awesome stuff with Project Feed the Hood. Big thank you to Lewis and Luna for engineering, and a big thank you to you all for listening. Buenas noches.
Thanks.